Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's markethouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY.
I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
Howdy, y'all. This is the Element Podcast, brought to you by First Light Gear. And by the way, we've been putting some First Light Gear to the test this past week with a lot of hog hunting. I've been using the orange vest, which is pretty nice. You know, it's kind of pockety, and it's nice to have a few pockets when you got a couple of shotgun shells floating around.
Pocket full of shells.
Today, when Tyler Jones and I... Casey Smith, in case you don't know, are going to talk about some archery setup stuff. And I know that it's kind of target season. We're not really target shooters, but we are going to go shoot some of the Total Archery Challenge stuff and have some fun with that. I am competitive enough with my own self that I don't need to compete against other people usually when it comes to shooting bulls. Anyways, I actually just shot a 100-yard shot and hit the target like 3 of 5 times, so that was pretty nice. Tyler?
Yeah?
What's the longest shot you killed an animal on this year?
I killed that mule deer, what did I say? I think it was like 62 or something.
Maybe. And you had been practicing...
60, 59, something like that.
All summer for a shot like that, right? Yeah. You like were really intensive about that.
Yeah, no, I knew that I drew that tag pretty early on. I knew that I would draw it before I even applied because I had the points to draw it. So that's just the way Colorado works. So knowing that, I started real early stretching it out and really focusing. I have I still have things to work on, guys. Just because you know, I'm on YouTube. It doesn't make me perfect. I know a lot of people would like to think I should be perfect, but I'm not, and I won't ever be. And so there's still things that I'm going to work on, and I don't...
We're not even dude perfect.
No, not even. We're... I mean, I'm kind of dudette perfect sometimes, man, if you ask me.
Dud perfect, is what you call me.
Dud perfect. But no, I still have some things to... Actually, my trigger finger is one thing I need to work on a little bit. I worked a lot over the last like year or so on my grip, my left hand, my grip hand grip, if that makes sense. I've worked on that a lot, and I think it's helped me become a better archer, along with just daily practicing stuff, which we're going to continue on here pretty soon once we kind of wrap up some of these edits that we've got from the season for videos and stuff. But I guess what I'm saying is just to – emphasize that there are parts. It's kind of like a golf swing, I would imagine. I'm not like a big time golfer, but I've golfed enough to know some stuff about it, and I like to watch it. And I also went to Topgolf with my wife the other day.
How'd that go?
It was awesome. But and my kids were with us. But she, I told her, hey, do this. Like I said, she was slicing it real hard. I was like, hey, just roll your right hand through, you know, when you come through, focus on that. Well, as soon as she does that, the other thing of she's like, her in seems like longer than mine. And so she doesn't bend her knees very well. Mm-hmm. She's a real storky, like stiff-legged, you know, lady. And so as soon as she starts working on her right hand rolling over, she loses all the bend in her knees. And she, as soon as she hit it, she topped it, and she told me that, and I knew it. But she told me, like, that's what – she's like, I forgot. As soon as I start working on this, you know. And that's the way bow hunting is, I think, too.
It's a good,
like,
example.
Yeah, it's like, dude, there's more than one thing you can work
you
on in every shirt, a shot.
Really paying attention to your bubble, and then all of a sudden you kind of forget about – squeezing and pulling through.
Yeah.
Or you start really paying attention to not torquing your wrist, and all of a sudden you kind of forget about your aiming process with your pins. And that's all stuff we're going to kind of get into.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, there's so many aspects that can you can work on. So I am still working on certain things. And what's really good about this is good and bad about what we do, right? I get to watch slow motion footage of myself, but so does, like, thousands of other people. Mm-hmm. And so they get to be real critical
of
me.
So, like, when you're, if in case your sight, like, didn't stop moving as you shot at a deer, or.
Yeah, you, or my trigger finger is just flipping out right before I shoot, like, doing this, which it does a lot.
It's
you
like
know?
Shooting paintball.
Yeah. It's like trying to double tap, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody knows that. And, you know, I do too, but I can only focus on a few things at a time. So I've been working on the grip. I think I've got that down to kind of a second nature kind of thing, you know, and now it's on to other things like the trigger finger and that kind of things this summer. So hopefully I just continue to get better and better. And I mean, Levi told me he's pretty scared of me. So,
yeah, I mean, I would be if I was him. So we talked about kind of going through things a little bit, in two parts here. We're going to talk about some of objective things about your archery setup. Some, like, different options with bows and archery equipment as far as, like, I don't know. It's not really styles, but, like, you know, let me just give you an example. Long axle to axle versus short axle to axle and stuff like that. And then we're going to go into our preferences and why we like certain things about stuff, and you can agree or disagree with that because it's subjective, and you might like a thing for a different reason than us, and that's okay. You know, we really don't ever claim to be experts at this stuff. We just are guys who have a decent amount of experience, you know, and that's the difference maker.
And here's another thing is that you and I get along pretty well and do, like, we see each other almost every day of the year, and we still, and we think about things the same way a lot, and we still have different things that we do in our bow setups that we prefer.
First off, we're built differently.
Yeah.
Our builds are different. I'm a upper body heavy type guy. I'm not, like, overly tall, you know, average size person, average draw length, whereas you're, like, I mean, you're not lanky, but you're
my feet are the big part.
You're tall and fairly proportional. Your feet are very well anchored to the ground, being a size 14. And you have a longer draw length. So, like, just in general, things are going to be a little different. And then our grips are different. You kind of have, like, a thumb injury thing that affects your grip some, where my wrist and thumb is just fine. Don't really have an issue with that too much. So there's just, you know, part of the reason why some things are subjective is because we're not all the same person. If we were all built like Levi, then a lot of us would be, I'm not going to say as good as him, but we'd have a better chance at being as good as him.
Yeah, it's, you know? I mean, when you've got a draw length like he probably has, I don't know what it is, but it looks long. I mean, it's like you're getting some extra FPS, so if you misjudge on the 3D range by a couple yards, you still are all right, you know? There's, I mean, you know, you don't see Kyrie, a new Dallas Maverick, hanging out in the post very often because he's not built like a post.
I don't really know what that means, but.
Yes, you do.
I kind of do.
You know exactly
I don't
what
really
that means.
Know.
You just want to be a hater of basketball.
No, I had to think about it. I like watching good basketball players play basketball, but I don't know what position he plays.
Like Michael?
As opposed to – I know the numbers better than I do. So Kyrie is like a 2-3 type guy.
I think he's a 1, right?
Is
here?
He?
Yep.
So he's a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And then a post is a 5?
Yep.
Okay.
Fours can be posts too.
Yeah. Dirk was a shooting four, right? Isn't that what he was?
Yeah. That's kind of what they, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hybridity that goes
there's
in there.
There's not a lot of true fives in the NBA these days.
Yeah.
Right?
I think they're not as five heavy as they were in like the 90s. So.
What about that dude that plays for the Nuggets? Is he a true five?
Who's that Nugget?
The big foreign guy? Yeah. He's a true five. Okay. Eric's also over here giving us a head nod.
Yeah. Eric knows. I mean, like I was saying, Michael's pretty good at basketball, and he got dominated by Eric this year. So,
golly.
You know, Eric was like probably like G League, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Could have been.
Dang. That'd be cool. So, how do we get on that from the Archer stuff?
Well, just saying that, like, your body type.
Yeah.
You know,
depends on
Kyrie's
how
not
you stuff.
Hanging out in the five, mm-hmm. is what I should have said.
Yeah. But there's no, you did fine. I just don't know everything about that.
Yeah.
That in particular, at least.
Everything else, though.
Yeah, everything else. Yeah. So, the objective things about archery, you're going to have a bow and you're going to have arrows and you're going to have a way to shoot those arrows. So, a lot of us use a handheld release or a wrist release. There's some people that finger shoot. It's real not a good thing to do if you're shooting a compound. So if you're learning, don't start doing that. But finger shooting is the way it's done when it comes to traditional archery. But we're pretty much just going to stick to the compound archery shooting today because that's what we are most familiar with. So you have bows, and bows have different components and different pieces and parts. Strings are relatively all the same. But one of the big differences that you're going to find in bows is going to be axle to axle. So, Tyler, where is the axle located on a bow?
It is at the top and bottom.
So, like, but it's in the middle of the wheel, which is called a cam.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the axle would be in the middle of the what you would think of as a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So,
and that is, it's doing the job of an actual axle. Because the wheel rotates around it, mm-hmm. right? And so axle-to-axle length is going to determine a few things about a bow. Oftentimes, bows that are longer axle-to-axle are more friendly to longer draw length people. They also tend to be a little more stable in hand just because you're spreading stuff out more, so it's harder to wiggle it around.
Mm-hmm. It's like the guy that walks the tightrope and holds the stick out.
Yeah.
You know, the longer a stick is, the better he mm-hmm. has a chance of staying on that rope.
Mm-hmm. It's axle to axle will also affect your string angle on your face. So if you're the type of person who has an anchor with the string on the tip of your nose, when you shoot a shorter axle to axle bow, you could end up tilting your head down to achieve that anchor point, which makes things kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. Another thing with bows that comes up is the brace height, which is the distance from the back of the grip to the string when the bow is at rest. A longer brace height, like a 7, is going to be more forgiving, which is a generalized term, meaning the bow is not as torquey and it's like a little easier to shoot. But you're going to not have as high of energy output for the draw poundage and stuff. Whereas like a short one, like a 5, is going to be really torquey, kind of a hard, finicky bow to shoot, but it's going to be pretty high energy for the draw weight on the bow. And there's everything in between on there. That's kind of pretty much, I mean, you're going to have carbon and aluminum risers. I don't really feel a lot of difference in those things. I have a carbon bow right now.
They say the carbon doesn't get cold in the cold.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true or not, but
I don't know either. I hadn't shot in the cold much.
Yeah.
It's supposed to not flex when you draw your bow. So like a riser is the part of the bow that like your hand touches and connects to the limbs. It's like what you call the body of the bow, probably. And that riser flexes when you draw your bow because it's aluminum. Aluminum is a flexible metal, and it kind of locks into place. That's why, like, when you look at your sight on your bow sometimes, when your bow isn't drawn, it might look like it's, like, cattywampus just a little bit. And it's because when you draw, everything lines up.
Mm-hmm.
So carbon isn't supposed to flex in that, and it's supposed to make for less vibration. whatever.
Yeah.
That's what they say, at least. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what's on the bow. There are then things you attach to the bow. Tyler?
Yep.
Let's talk about rests. The rest is going to probably be like one of the next most important things on a bow, I would think. Mm-hmm. There's a couple different types. What type do you use?
We actually did a video on this.
We did. That's right.
So if you want to see a more in-depth, we'll just talk about some of this stuff real quick right now and then talk about our preferences. But if you want to see more in-depth, you can go watch a video. I think we put it out last summer, so you scroll back a little ways. There are what a lot of people refer to as a whisker biscuit or a brush-style rest, which is like an encompassing brush. 360, since it looks like a biscuit, you know, and it's got a hole in the middle where all the brushes stop and your arrow goes right in that hole. It's really good at keeping the arrow from falling out of the rest or the shooting position when you're spot and stalk and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And basically the fletchings go through the whiskers. You have a some would consider to call a fall away rest. What's the other?
So they're going to be both fallaways.
Well, yeah.
But there's a limb-driven and a cable-driven.
Yeah. So the limb-driven is like what you've got, where you have a string that's attached to the limb. And the limb, the movement of the limb, the quick movement, sets off that rest to fall out of the way as the arrow is going forward, so that motion of it going forward carries its momentum straight as opposed to down with the rest. And the same thing happens with the other fallaway type that's cable driven, which goes into or attaches to somehow your cables on your bow. And the same thing happens as soon as when you pull back and it engages some sort of mechanism in there that knows that it's going to fall forward if it goes forward at a fast enough rate. And so therefore, whenever you set your bow off and that fast rate happens, it drops out of the way, momentum carries the arrow forward. And then there's another rest that's like it's got like a little pin that comes out from the side. You see that on like some beginner bows a lot of times. It's just kind of this little tiny rest that kind of, it'll fold in. So it normally wants to sit out. You put your arrow on it. When you let go of the arrow, the fletching or the arrow kind of drives it out of the way sometimes. So they got those kind. Then they got a prong style rest, which is like two prongs that come together and your arrows, they come close enough that your arrow will sit on a little flat spot at the end of both those prongs and shoot forward. So
that's what a lot of us shot back in the day. It was like the, before fallaways became a normal thing.
Yep.
You would time your prong rest out right to where your fletching would go in between the two prongs.
Yep.
Yeah, and be the so the idea is the less contact your arrow has with your rest, the less influence your rest has on arrow flight, which is all well and good until like you maybe don't have the skill level or the time to practice to be proficient with something like that or care to, and that's when like things like a whisker biscuit or a
brush style rest
come in handy because they're foolproof almost.
It's, I mean, as far as like there's like if you think about it theoretically, there's a chance that like you're not shooting with the same amount of brushes in between each fletching every time, like you're probably not, right? So that could affect accuracy, but there's just not that many people that can quote unquote from Mr. McCarty shoot the difference.
So I think that if you were a guy who was shooting 30 and in from a tree stand exclusively, and that's all you ever did, it's pretty hard to beat because it's just so fail-safe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not going to go bad until it wears out, and you can tell when that's starting to happen. You know, now, given on those type wrists, Greg encountered this year, three fletchings work way better than four fletchings.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure why that is, but it probably just has to do with less contact, you know, with the bristles or whatever. But keep that in mind if you do choose to go with something like that. Tyler and I both choose to go with a little bit, I don't know what you'd say, more complicated type. We just feel comfortable with those. And you'll see a motif in this is that you just need to shoot something you feel really comfortable with. In fact, have a bow right now that I don't feel as comfortable with, and I probably won't shoot it a whole lot. I'm probably going to shoot the bow I shot last season quite a bit just because I'm very comfortable with it. But we're going to talk about that stuff a little bit more later. Quivers is another big thing. People like to carry arrows with them whenever they shoot a bow, and your quiver is the thing that holds your arrows. They make a lot of different types of quivers. The thing I like the most is a quiver that will attach to my bow and then detach at will. Whenever I would like to take it off, I can. Some people like to have quivers that stay on their bow all the time. And then there are some old school people that like to have like a hip quiver or something like that. Our friend Chris B actually uses that a hip quiver a lot whenever he stalks, which I can see making some sense. The downfall of a quiver that attaches to your bow is, well, there's two things really. It can make more noise on your bow. Like say you shoot, those arrows can rattle around sometimes. Especially if you got mechanical broadheads on there, they can make some noise. But the bigger thing is in the wind, it catches more wind and can cause you some aiming issues, you know, especially when you're on the ground, spot and stalk style or whatever.
I feel like also one thing, because I don't like shooting with mine, and I rarely do, but I sometimes do in a stalk situation, is you feel that extra, like, pull to the right, you know, for me. Like, I may have the, because I'm not used to it, I may have the, like, I may be sort of leaning that way because I'm just not used to that. Yeah. So,
you know, I just shot a 100-yard shot in the yard a while ago, and we posted that on Instagram just because we are lame, don't have anything else to talk about. But my bubble was having a hard time leveling out the opposite of that, and I didn't shoot with my quiver on. And I wonder if it's because my grip is fairly adapted to having a quiver on when I shoot a lot of the times. So, like, I'm just balanced that way to have the quiver on there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder if I should go shoot that shot with the – because I was missing – not missing, but I was hitting a little left of where – I wanted to be at that range. And I wonder if I had a quiver on, if that would pull me back over into the right. But at the same time, if I'm taking longer distance shots and there's any wind at all, I don't want to have a quiver on it. So there's that aspect of it as well.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. Now, this is a good innovation here, and it solves a real problem, okay? So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools, like a griddle on your grill. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. There's no use of coatings, okay? You can use metal tools to flip, press, and scrape without worry. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. Now, the problem with griddles, everything rusts. No one talks about how bad everything rusts. The reason they don't, because they couldn't fix it until now. Well, Weber's new rust-resistant technology your Weber grill will last for years. When used, the carbon steel griddle hardens and bonds the surface, reducing the ability for moisture to collect and rust to form. With the new Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system, you can keep cooking and cleaning supplies handy, carry food and condiments from the kitchen to the griddle, and even convert the side table into a prep station. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
What else is there with quivers? Oh, people, there's different numbers of arrows you can have in a quiver.
Mm-hmm.
I think 4 arrows is the most I have ever used in one outing. And that's like probably hog hunting. I shot 3 arrows in Illinois at a deer. First one killed him, but sometimes when they're still moving, you're just flinging arrows. Mm-hmm. You know, I would encourage you to do that. You know, there's no reason in letting an animal
You're just trying to keep them from going Pope and Young. So you didn't have to brag
That's
about
right.
it.
That's right. Trying to
take a little notch out them antlers.
But I say all that to say this. They do make like 3 arrow quivers, but I think the common configurations are, you know, from 4 to 7. You know, Uncle Ted shoots like 12. He has like a double stack thing going on. I think Matthews makes it for him. Like,
never know how many does
just for him. That's it, dude. You never know if it's going to be a Lechway or a Ginsbuck.
Yeah, that's right.
A whitetail walks in. They all got back straps. But
Eric, how many did I shoot at that mule deer this year? Do you remember? I shot 4 for sure. I for sure shot 4.
Yeah.
I hit him with the first shot, missed him with the second from there. Hit him with my first shot. And then I walked up and shot him twice, I believe, at like point blank. So pretty sure I shot 4 and had 1 arrow left whenever he went down, I think. Spooky.
Yeah.
Because you ain't nowhere near an arrow at that point. Mm-mm. I mean, it ain't just go back to the truck and come back 20 minutes later or anything.
And that's another thing to think about, too. This is kind of beyond archery setups, but if you're going on a backcountry hunt where you're way back in there, maybe you do bring more than 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think whenever we went in the Gila, I brought more arrows in my backpack, if I remember right. I didn't end up needing them, but, you know,
it's
better to have them and not need them for sure.
And one thing, you know, we kind of have done something similar, a podcast similar to this, but we just wanted to kind of run through this stuff real quickly again before. There's a lot of people that may have come over from the Meat Eater stuff that we've done recently, and we know they're pretty much all rifle hunters. So if you're, you know, maybe some new people that are interested in this, so we're kind of keeping it basic, but for the L Element faithful, you guys are probably a little bit like, oh, yeah, we know this. We've heard this, you know.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, but we definitely want to talk about what we're shooting and those kind of things too.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned arrows, carbon, and aluminum are kind of the main things right now. I mean, traditional, they shoot wood ones sometimes. And,
yeah. Not a lot of regular old aluminums floating around out there these days for hunting, but there probably are still a few. There's some old school guys that just can't get away from the 2275s too.
Yeah.
But those, what are they? FMJs or a hybrid that some people know. We shoot what is now known as method archery arrows that are pretty sweet.
Carbons.
Work just fine for me.
And then there's also something that, you know, there's really no debate on is broadheads. So we'll talk about those too.
No debate at all, right?
Yeah.
So
I've never heard a good debate, at least. So
not at all.
They're all
nobody
bad
has a good. Nobody has a good argument.
Nope.
Oh, man. I've been shooting these since 82, and they killed every single thing I shot. Really?
Yeah.
You know, the other guy said that about his, too. So, you know, it's kind of funny how that all works. Tyler, we're not going to do subjective stuff right now, right? You got mechanical or expandable. That's kind of the interchangeable words there. Mechanical seem to be kind of the more common term these days. You got fixed blades. You got field points for practice, which are just a little stud, pretty much. And then within those, you have rear deploy, front deploy, expandables, and then in the fixed blades, you got replaceable blades, and then you got one-piece fixed blades. So there's debate on all that, and pretty much if you hit a deer in the spot that it takes to kill it, you will kill it.
That's right.
And that's the end of the debate.
That's it.
So the aiming device is known as a sight. We use two sort of different types of sights. Tyler, what do you have?
It's called a Pro Hunter or something. It's a black gold. It's basically a three-pin mover. And so I can move the whole sight housing. So it doesn't move one pin, but you pick which pin you want to be your mover. So for some reason, I get the feeling a lot of guys choose their top pin, but I choose my bottom because it makes sense to me in my mind that I would shoot 20, 30, 40, and then anything else is still with my bottom pin because that's always my farthest pin that I'm shooting. So that's just how it makes sense in my mind, but it doesn't, however it makes sense for you in a stressful situation, it's probably the best way. And so it can even make sense to you in a stressful situation. You can mess it up pretty easy. I did that recently. So
I shoot a, well, it's what you kind of want to call a single pin, but it's actually a dual pin vertical stack. So I have two pins essentially, but they come from the bottom of the sight housing versus the side.
Yeah, mine come from the side.
And there's also single pin horizontal. There's four and five, and I used to have a seven-pin horizontal. And there's also a more common type of sight actually is would be a fixed three-pin or four-pin, five-pin. So that, so instead of being able to adjust yardage, which is kind of a Western-type thing, you know, traditionally – not traditionally, but, you know, through the years, guys have used like a 20, 30, 40 setup a lot of times on their bows where you just have pins that are set at those distances and you do what's called gap shooting where if a deer's at 35, you kind of put him between those two pins and shoot. It's really effective, honestly. If I didn't do more Western style stuff or a decent amount of spot and stalk whitetail on the ground, I probably wouldn't shoot a moving or, you know, adjustable sight.
Talk about why you shoot a vertical stack.
So Eric broke the couch. Let me think right quick. Let's talk about releases and then we'll go into our personal preferences stuff. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. So, those are pretty much your options for sights as far as like styles or whatever. There's a lot of components and different things to that. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I do have some reasons why I shoot the one I do, and Tyler has the reasons why he shoots the one he does. The kind of the last thing really is going to be your thing that connects you to the bow. I think they're properly called release aids, but pretty much we're going to call them releases. That's what they've always kind of been called. There are a couple different options here. You can have a wrist strap style release, which is what Tyler and I both shoot. You can have a handheld release as well, which is going to be something that kind of, I don't know, looks like a fidget spinner that you hold in your hand and it attaches to the bow. And those are kind of the two major options outside of like finger shooting or something like that, which is not something that I suggest you do. The reason, I guess we go into reasons now, right? As far as like personal preferences, within the wrist strap world, it's all I'm going to really talk about too much because I hadn't experienced the other stuff too much. There are not a lot of variances. They're all going to pretty much have like an index finger trigger on them. But the where the changes do happen are on how it connects to your bow. So on a bowstring, more often than not, on modern compound bows, your shop is going to tie what's called a D-loop. So you actually connect to a loop of cordage that connects to the string. So it keeps you from wearing out your string and kind of helps with knock pinch and some things like that. I shoot a index finger trigger hook style release. So that means that whenever I go to connect to my bowstring, I just have a hook that sticks out off the end of my release, and I just kind of put that through the loop and can draw back. So it's not really a closed system, right? In a imperfect world, I could torque my release hand really bad and have the string slip off of the hook. Now, that ideally isn't going to happen unless catastrophe strikes and then I do something really, really weird. So I don't worry about it too much. But what I really like about that is that I can do it pretty much without looking. So I can be watching an animal. I can find my D-loop with my thumb and put that hook through there without ever taking my eyes off the animal. Instead of, like, I've been in this way elk hunting in the past. Like, things go to happening fast and you're trying to figure out where your D-loop is. And you have to look down and you're trying to pinch your little calipers on there to make sure you're connected to your bow. And you look up and you're like, wait, what's going on? I don't know where the animal is. That sort of thing. Tyler, you shoot a hook now, right? But in the past, you shot something different?
Yeah, I used to shoot a dual caliber pretty much my whole life. And so it's same as a single or a hook type of thing. Well, it's same as a hook, but almost, but it has like two hooks that, you know, the end of the hook comes together. And that's where basically you release through that. But I've gone to the single since kind of learning about your theory on quickly obtaining the D-loop. Mm-hmm. And you had a very giant deer where I spot and stalked and couldn't get clipped onto my D-loop very quickly. And those two things made me switch.
That happened with that big buck?
I had the dual caliper and I missed. Of course, this literally happens in probably less than a second, but it felt like
freak you
forever,
out.
Dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, I'm sitting there and, like, I miss, like, either, like once or twice before I actually got it clipped mm-hmm. into the D-loop, and it freaked me out. And I since have really liked the single hook. So
it's good.
There's a single caliper, too, that's like it's like the dual, but it's got a flat side instead of on one side instead of two hooks. And that single caliper just goes to that flat side.
That is my least favorite.
Yeah.
For sure. I've seen, because the caliper that does move has to be longer to go out and, like, assess the string, or for lack of a better term. And so Brendan used to shoot one of those. And if you have any kind of, like, torque to your release hand at all, it can put, like, some side pressure on that hook and make it not really want to go off whenever you do end up squeezing the trigger. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's guys that shoot and kill with them all the time, but that one does have a little bit of a flaw to it that I have seen. So it's not my favorite when it comes to that stuff. Now, when it comes to handhelds, there's thumb buttons. There are some that you can trigger with your index finger, I believe, and then there are back tension releases. I won't go too much of a deep dive into that because I'm not 100%, or I shouldn't say that. I'm not as familiar with those because I've never hunted with them. I have had friends that have hunted with them all with some mixed reviews. I do have a friend I know who has tried that and is going back to, well, y'all know him, Mark Kenyon. From what I understand, Mark says he's going to go back to a index finger release after trying the thumb button handheld thing or whatever, partially because of the familiarity of the traditional style thumb or index finger. It's just like what you're talking about. The panic factor can go up sometimes, and it's easier to keep up with because it's actually attached to your body. That's one of my big things on it. You know, if I like keep mine on my gear shifter on my truck, and when I get out of my truck or go to get out of my truck, I put it on every time, never changes, and I don't think I forgot my release one time this year, except for when we were in Arkansas with Clay Newcomb, and I had to back the boat in, so I wasn't the guy getting out of my truck. So I had to go get my release out of my truck, and I was the guy in the boat. So that's releases. Let's get back to sights, because you asked me about that a while ago. I like a vertical pin sight because I probably assess my target differently in a ill-advised way than most people do, I think. Reviewing it a little bit, I think it's taught that you should come down into your target. And I very much more just find my target. I about near have my pins on my target when I draw my bow, and they don't move very much. And so I like to have a more open field of view because of that, and that helps. In 2019, you and I went to the Gila, hunted elk, and I'm not going to blame it on my sight because I should have done a better job, but I did have a 7-pin sight with a lot of pins floating around in there, not a very clear sight picture, which then in turn allowed me to choose the wrong pin in a very rushed situation, and I shot a 60 instead of a 40 at a giant bull elk and missed over his back. And ever since then, I really decided to do something differently, and I have, and it works good for me now. I really like it. Yeah. So there's my reasoning.
Yeah, well, it's good. I recently chose the wrong pin on a pig, so.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that video, you can check it out, too. It's just released, like, last week or whatever, so.
Good to have a buddy who is around to be like, hey, did you set your pins back?
Yeah.
Because not that that would have helped you then or not, but it's just something I think about now. I asked you the other day.
Yeah.
Not because I don't trust you too, but I've done it too, you know?
But here's the thing. Is it's not a big deal if you don't set your pins back if you're shooting past where your normal furthest pin is. But when you're shooting inside of your pins and you're just like, oh, I got that right here. Yeah. I got a 30-yard pin.
Uh-huh.
Then you don't move it.
Yeah.
If you're shooting, if your next shot is at like 55, you're like, oh, I got to move my pins. And then you're like, oh, well, I've already got it set to 55. Yeah. I forget that I did that.
I haven't done it in a while. I haven't done an animal in a while, I don't think. But it's real easy to get out here in the yard with movable pins and like set a 87 and then put your bow up because, you know, usually the longest shots are the ones you do at the end of the day.
And do you know anybody personally that does that like a lot?
I don't know. Do we?
That
do
leaves, we their, leaves their long pin set and then comes out the next morning and shoots it like 20 with a 87 yard pin.
Yeah. Actually, I do remember somebody who does stuff like that. He practiced a lot though.
Yeah. He's got Isaac and Method on speed dial.
That's right. Hey man, send me another 7 dozen arrows.
Yeah. I forgot to move my pin this week.
The practice that I have now is anytime I move my pins, I just always move it back to the top. No matter if I'm going to shoot another 40 or a little bit or whatever. But, like, it's a thing. Like, say you have an animal encounter and you get it all set and then it doesn't pan out. Well, don't leave it set to what it was. And roll it back up to 20. I have a 20 and a 30. And then you can roll again if you need to. Because ideally, that's the shot distance you're shooting stuff anyways. You know, closer the better. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Any other preferences on sights that you have?
Oh, 010 pins.
Yeah.
I prefer the smaller pins. I don't know if you know what those are about or not. But
my sight doesn't come in that, so that's fun.
You shoot 019s, which are a little bit bigger.
Yeah. You know, it hasn't been as big of a problem as I thought it would be, but I still like the precision of the smaller ones.
Yeah,
for sure.
If you don't have very good vision, then the 019s are probably your pin. But if you have eagle eye vision, like KC, 010s are probably pretty preferable.
There is this thing too that you can mess with it's like peep sight size and distance of your sight housing from your riser. Like they have adjustable ones on that kind of stuff sometimes, and I've noticed that, like, having a little bit bigger peep is nice for that because you can just kind of line the circle up inside the circle. So that's a thing to think about when it comes to sight choosing as well. Having one that has an adjustable distance for your sight from your housing is kind of nice. Axle-to-axle stuff. This is we talked a little bit about the quiver stuff, and I think we kind of agree. Like, just having one that you can take off is kind of nice. But axle to axle is where things get kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because it's not a straight on, just like body type is better for this or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there's this sentiment out there of a mountain bow. You ever heard about the mountain bow thing? Like, oh, I'd be good in the mountains, you know?
Heard of a tree bow.
Have you?
Yeah. In a tree, you want a little bow so you can get it around the limbs.
Yeah. Same concept. People think that you carry a mountain bow, you know, it's a short axle to axle, it's lighter weight and easier to maneuver. Which I can't imagine trying to shoot a short axle to axle bow in the mountains. It sounds terrible. I actually did it. I had old Matthew's Triax, which was, you know, a really fast bow for them back then. And that thing was the torqueiest little sucker I ever shot in my life. I did not shoot it very good. And it actually created a bunch of target panic for me, which I think is kind of a fake thing anyways. But I did notice that, like, it was a lot harder to hold my pins on, and it's a whole lot harder to get on target with that thing Whereas now things just settle in. It's almost like the bow just, it's like it's a puzzle piece that fits right in where it's supposed to be when I go to shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So my bow I have now is a, what is it, like 33 and a half axle to axle or something like that?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. I have an SR350 Bobotech, and I like that bow a whole lot. And I also have the Carbon 1, which I do not like. Because it's a shorter axle to axle, I think is the reason, but that's a pretty subjective thing. Some guys like that, especially if you have a shorter draw length. You might like that shorter axle to axle. It just feels like it's not, you can control it better.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I'm a pretty strong upper body guy. I don't have a problem with, feeling that way or something. I don't know. I just like the longer axle to axle. I feel like they're less torquey. I can shoot it like, if I had that thing out there, it's 30 axle to axle, right? If I had it in the yard out there and I was shooting that 100-yard shot, I would not feel good about my chances of hitting the target.
Mm-hmm.
When I put the SR350 up there and was shooting it, I like knew I was going to hit the target.
Yep.
And one time I didn't, and I was like, why did that just happen? Mm-hmm. That was weird.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my take on the axle to axle.
Yeah, I'm
stuff.
Pretty much the same way, man. This, I mean, I kind of want a longer ATA because – I feel like it's going to overall probably going to shoot better. But yeah, there are different variables that work into torque and other things. So it's not just like a necessarily across the board thing, but overall that's where I sit on that kind of stuff too. And I guess like most of the time there's kind of a sweet spot on ATAs where like they, the longer ones, I may be speaking wrong here, but I feel like I've seen, at least in some of the bow catalogs that I've looked at lately, that like the middle range ATAs are what shoot the fastest sometimes. And so like you get, you know, like you can get a long ATA that's not going to shoot as fast as like a 33 or a 32 or something like that, or even a 34. And then you get some of the like shorter ones that don't shoot as fast as those either for some reason.
I think it's like a way they build them kind of thing, and this is me just kind of speculating.
Mm-hmm.
But like a lot of times those 36s, well, for one, those are target bows.
Yeah.
A lot of times, but some guys repurpose them into hunting bows. But they're assuming that the guys that are shooting those bows are longer draw length type guys sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting their speed on a different end.
Right.
And it actually lets them make those bows even less torquey because they're, you know, the more inches you have on your draw length, the faster you're going to be shooting.
So IBO is based off a 30 draw?
I believe IBO is a 30 draw in like, I don't know, stupid light arrow.
If you know that, message us, because I can't remember. I think it's 30.
We can look it up if we want to, but it's pretty much, it's like a 350 grain arrow or something like that.
Yeah, it's like almost impossible to get.
Yeah, and you're not going to be able to tune a bow with that, you know, like it's just, it's ridiculous. But it is a baseline, and baselines are nice to have.
Yeah, so you know, you can know that. Typically, which I don't know how much line goes on in this whole thing.
I feel like there's a couple digits worth of line that can
I mean,
go back
I know you
forth.
Love corporations, but you may not can trust them always. But I think overall, like you said, it's a baseline to kind of compare what you might want across the board.
Yeah. So. One of the things that you'll notice is that most modern bows are going to be in the 330 to 350 range on IBO. The higher you get on the IBO, oftentimes the harder the bow is to shoot, whereas the lower, the more forgiving they would say the bow would be to shoot. Now, the SR350 I have, and you have too, seems to be the best of both worlds. It's the best speed bow I've ever shot. Now, I shot a Elite 2 years ago that was slow, but I killed everything I pointed that thing at because it was like so easy to shoot.
Yep.
So you just kind of have to take that with a grain of salt and find the bow that fits you the best, the one that you can shoot the best. If you can shoot a speed bow like the SR350 without having too much torque and you can tune that thing up, then do it because it's a bad mamma jamma.
Mm-hmm.
It kills some stuff.
Oh.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on FishingBooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. Now, this is a good innovation here, and it solves a real problem, okay? So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools, like a griddle on your grill. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. There's no use of coatings, okay? You can use metal tools to flip, press, and scrape without worry. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. Now, everything, the problem with griddles, everything rusts. No one talks about how bad everything rusts. The reason they don't, because they couldn't fix it until now. Well, Weber's new rust-resistant technology, your Weber grill will last for years. When used, the carbon steel griddle hardens and bonds the surface, reducing the ability for moisture to collect and rust to form. With the new Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system, you can keep cooking and cleaning supplies handy, carry food and condiments from the kitchen to the griddle, and even convert the side table into a prep station. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle.
So
I like the reason I like the 350 and the speed is because we shoot a lot of in a lot of situations we've never been to that place before.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, you know, guys have their favorite tree stand on their favorite property and they know the distances and they've been there before and it's familiar. But you go set up in a hackberry and you got two shooting lanes and they're, you know, 110 degrees apart.
Mm-hmm.
Things can get haywire real quick, man. And to be able to know that you're covered within like a 7-yard range or whatever is pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. See, I kind of take a little bit different approach because I tend to err a little bit more towards the heavier side on my arrow choice than Tyler does. And that still bodes well for the 350 IBO bow. Whereas, like right now, I'm shooting a 540 grain arrow at 262 feet per second. That's not blistering fast, but it's fast enough to really pack a wallop whenever a fairly heavy arrow gets somewhere.
It's a wallop packer.
It is. It's a wallop bee, as they say. jump around, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I like fast bows if you can shoot them good. If they're good shooting ones, then that one for sure is. Tyler.
Y'all.
This is real subjective. Let's talk about some coloration, bro.
Ooh.
Here's the deal, man.
Coloration.
Everybody likes to be real cool, but not act like they're cool. Act like they're just naturally cool.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, this is just me. You know?
Yeah, it's just how I am, man. We all really like a cool-looking bow, you know, and we like to make it cool colors and add stuff to it and all that stuff. Michael doesn't. He says he just wants to shoot his diamond and be good with that for forever. Me, on the other hand, I like my bow to be cool, man. Uh-huh. So how do you pick colors for a bow, Tyler?
You know, it's kind of, hey, there's basically two categories here, right? There's a few categories, subcategories maybe.
Yeah.
The two categories are square or tame or whatever you want to say, and domesticated, and then there's wild guys, right?
Feral.
There's feral dudes. So basically, if you are a guy that likes a little flair to your setup, then, but, you know, some greens, some yellows, some pinks might be your kind of thing. If you're a guy that likes to kind of play the cool, you might want the browns, the earth tones. You may, if you want to branch out a little bit, you may end up being the guy that chooses the blue, which I don't suggest if you're a whitetail hunter.
They see blue really well.
They see blue very well.
Yeah.
Here's
another thought I have on that is I don't like black bows because on the ground, the color black is something that sticks out pretty bad.
Really. Yeah.
There's not a lot of black things out there in the woods. There's dark shades of stuff, and yeah, you know, it's better than probably white, but I like things that are kind of the lighter shades, lighter tones of stuff, because even if it does, your outline is exposed, a lighter shade of something is just a little less obtrusive than a big dark object like a black or something like that.
Yeah.
I even went so far as to color my bow with a lighter riser and darker limbs because I thought that a deer, if it looks at you while you're at full draw, it's just going to see your riser and it doesn't see your limbs. But maybe if your bow's hanging in a tree, having dark limbs makes it look like part of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably overthinking things. But, you know, like if you do get to pick the colors, why not put some thought into it?
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
details, dude. You know? I chose my last two bows. I pretty much chosen kind of just some lighter colors overall, like earth tones, but then using some colorful accents. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But those kind of colorful accents, yeah. that's me personally. Yeah. But I like the earth tone browns and grays mm-hmm. and stuff. I mean, I'm either going to be on the ground where dark colors tend to bunch up at distance, especially and look bad, or in the sky where also you can look like a gorilla.
So let's. Tell me this.
Yep.
Here recently, you ordered some lightweight arrows.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you do that, Tyler?
Because I'm going to do some turkey hunting with a bow.
Man, you're like dedicated, dude.
Yeah.
You just are an archer, aren't
you? Either that or my hand has been forced. Some places you can't go hunt turkeys with a shotgun unless you have, you know, preference. So. Yeah.
So we're going to do some bow hunting for turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your thoughts are what on that?
I don't need the same energy to get through a turkey that I need to get through a whitetail or a Neil guy or something like that, mm-hmm. or a hog. So, instead of using a big heavy arrow, I'm going to use a light arrow. That way my accuracy theoretically is improved at different distances.
There's a chance that, we're hunting in some, varied terrain mm-hmm. too for some of this. We might be hunting some mountain birds and stuff where in the mountains distances can be deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
So the lighter the arrow, you talked about this a while ago, your pin gap is smaller, mm-hmm. as they would say. So like your cushion on distance is better. So say you range a turkey at 30, he takes two steps, you don't know if he's 33 or he's 27 or whatever it might be,
mm-hmm.
with a lighter arrow, you don't have to worry about that as much.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I don't know how this exactly all plays together,
mm-hmm.
like when you look at physics and stuff, but most of the target shooters shoot pretty light arrows.
Yeah.
So there's something to it,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know why that's the case or whatever, and I can't explain it, but
yeah.
there's something there. So
well, just leave it at that. For sure is going to be less of a pin gap. I mean, our good friend Michael over here is shooting a pretty low energy bow, a 320, with some arrows that are like in the 3 or 520 grain range, and ranging something like 2 yards difference makes a big deal for him. Whereas, like, if you do that with 100 grains less, you know, that's about near 1/5 of the arrow is gone. So you're going to have a less of a effect when yep. when they have the 2 yard difference or whatever. So makes pretty good sense to me. What about broadhead choice, Tyler?
There's a lot of things I could say. There's a lot of variables in this.
Good. Everybody likes to talk about this.
And so we can talk about it. I think we should talk about it. But I will say this. This is the most hotly debated thing in the archery hunting world, probably. So with that, I'm going to tell you what
I change that, by the way.
Good.
I'm going to make the crossbow thing the more
there you debated go. Thing. There you go. So with that's kind of the caveat here. What I'm saying is I'm going to say some stuff here, and a lot of people aren't going to agree with it, and a lot of people are. And so don't be mad at me. Just this is just what I shoot, and this is why, okay? And this is what I think about it. And I'd be glad to field some questions, some emails about this, but I can't promise a response because some people are just irrational. So,
so you're saying you'd be glad to receive some. You're just not sure you'll
actually
gotta
agree with what I'm saying.
Right.
No, just rational people are way more fun to talk to.
So you're gonna field your questions like Joe Biden does a press conference. He already knows who's going to ask the question, and he's going to answer a certain thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. I won't know who's going to ask the question. I'll just know that when – that the only questions that will get answered are the ones that I like. So.
Yeah.
But it's similar, yeah.
The teleprompter is going to say what it says, right?
So, I, like you mentioned earlier, my grip is different. I have, I'm devolved, maybe. I have non-opposable thumbs, so I'm more of a monkey than a monkey, if you want to say it that way. No, I'm kidding. But I do not have opposable thumbs somehow. I don't know. I can't remember. I have been injured so much that I don't remember injuries. And so I don't know if this is an old football injury or not, but I literally, if you look at your thumb, go from your thumbnail down to the first joint, I can move that joint. Go to the next joint down towards your arm, I cannot move that joint on either thumb. And I don't know if I was born like that or if they were injuries. Essentially, it affects my grip, though. So I like my grip to be best. My grip actually has to be lower on the grip than most people's because my thumb wants to stick up really high and hit against the shelf of the riser. And so because of that, I can have some torque. And because of the torque, I cannot shoot a fixed blade. At least most of the fixed blades I've shot have had some sort of planing effect. And that is where they take off and go in a different direction like many planes do. And so it's not good. Like I don't need to be planing when I'm shooting things, and I don't really want to focus on my grip so hard that I can't think about other things like when is that deer going to stop? What does the deer look like while I'm shooting him? Is he amped up? Is he going to jump the string? Is he not going to jump the string? Is he chasing a doe? Is this where I should grunt him so that he stops in the lane in the right spot for me to shoot him? You know, all these different things you can think about. The last thing I want to be thinking about is my grip and am I holding it exactly right? I want it to feel natural and be instinctive. I mean, that's sort of how I shoot a shotgun. I shoot a shotgun pretty well. So I can do that because it's very instinctive. It's like throwing a football at a receiver. Like it's something that is more instinctive and some dudes are better at that than others, right? And you can get better at too. So with that said, that's a long way of saying I shoot mechanical broadheads, and I pretty much shoot the biggest ones I can find. I might have shot whitetail specials at the mule deer.
Did I?
Okay.
We talked a lot about it.
Yeah,
and
I almost
decided to.
Yeah.
Yeah, just shoot that.
And then I shot that's a giant three-blade broadhead, and I shot a giant three-blade mechanical broadhead at a Neil guy and stuck it in his spine so hard that we could not get it out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, with a 500, I'm looking at like a 497 grain arrow. That's what I'm getting. That's the penetration I'm getting with a like front deploy mechanical. So rear deploy, you probably could get a, even a little bit better penetration probably, huh?
Yeah, and then, probably, maybe. I mean,
it's negligible, but.
Yeah, I don't think it makes that much of a difference. But some people say it does.
It makes sense if you think about it. But
here's my thing, man. If you're to the point where you have to worry about that, you might not should be shooting mechanicals in the first place. Mm. Because it does take a certain amount of energy to effectively shoot in a mechanical.
Yeah.
You don't want to put your 10-year-old shooting a 45-pound bow out there with a mechanical. Mm. It's just a bad idea. You know, I mean, you can if you want to.
But your 10-year-old's probably also, or if you're just somebody who can't pull a bow very far, like you should probably limit yourself to mm-hmm. shorter shots. Because
yeah.
here's the deal. My aeroplanes at 90 yards, mm-hmm. that's like feet and feet of planing. At 20 yards, that's inches mm-hmm. of planing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the same concept as if you started from here where we're at in Texas and you tried to go to Canada and you're off by 1 degree mm-hmm. headed north, you would miss the entire country of Canada.
Is that right?
I've heard that. I don't know if that's right, but it's crazy to think that like just a little bit at a long distance, you're mm-hmm. off, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I think too that there are some fixed heads that lend themselves to that better. Like the slick tricks
yeah.
we have. They have a lot
blades.
Of smaller blades. And they're vented.
Vented.
And they fly really good.
Vented meaning they have holes in them.
Yeah.
Inside, like within the blade. Mm. So.
And the slower your bow is going, the more forgiving it's going to be on this stuff. You know, there's people who claim to shoot like a 310 foot per second arrow that still shoot fixed blades. And I'm like, man, you must be shooting close.
Disaster.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I like shooting a heavy arrow because it slows my bow down and it makes my arrow like just super tuned.
Mm-hmm.
It just flies straight.
Yeah.
I used to shoot 600 grain arrows. You know, you remember we were doing some testing with Isaac doing that. And it's like, it's comical how straight that arrow flies through the air. You know?
Think about if you've ever played baseball with your friends in the yard when you're younger, throwing a ping pong ball and trying to hit that versus throwing a baseball. And think about the amount of spin and, you know, you're throwing something that's lightweight as opposed to something that's heavy. Momentum is going to want to carry straight.
Yeah, you're doing the opposite of throwing a curveball when you're shooting a bow.
Mm.
But so we can talk about it in that sense. It's pretty easy to take a ping pong ball and throw a really wicked curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the guys who can throw a good curveball with a baseball are getting paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? And so the same thing applies to arrows. A baseball is a lot heavier than a ping pong ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go with a heavier arrow, it just doesn't want to torque out too bad.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So there's some thoughts about arrows, broadheads. Now, if you want more penetration, bigger animals, thicker skin, those kind of things, then a fixed blade is going to be your go-to. And I think, like, ultimately, if you want the max penetrator, then you've got to use a, like, what they call a two-blade.
Like a single bevel. Which a single bevel, actually, I don't feel like gives you as much penetration as a double bevel two blade, like straight up just old school arrowhead, you know?
Yeah. A single bevel, from what I understand, is created to puncture bone well, right?
Yeah.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. Say so it's going to break the bone when it hits it.
Breaks the bone better than.
And there's people screaming at me right now. But
yeah.
I don't know, man. I think that I've broken some bones with all kinds of arrows, you know, like. Bones don't like to be hit with hard stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe there's a thing to it.
I think, I mean, potentially, but, you know, here's something that Casey's been talking about all year, and I think it makes a lot of sense, and I've always kind of done the same thing without really vocalizing it. But waiting for good shots is potentially more effective than trying to plan B an arrow, right? And go, well, what if I hit the shoulder?
Yeah.
Well, if you shoot a quarter and away shot, you're going to have a hard time hitting the shoulder.
Yeah.
And you might, but you don't have to aim that close to the shoulder if you're shooting a Fuji, if you're shooting a, you know, quarter and away shot. So, like you've been saying all year, shoot them in the soft stuff and they will die.
That's
you know? And that's essentially you're saying find the right shot and put it through some lungs. You know what I mean? Put through liver and lungs, and that deer is going to die quickly.
Yeah. I mean, so. that doesn't mean the guts, right? And they will die there too.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. And if you do shoot a deer in the guts, you're going to want the biggest broadhead you have.
Yeah.
Because it's a waiting game. Mm-hmm. And the bigger the broadhead, the better. But like my Kansas deer this year, I might have hit one lung, but I smoked the liver. I kind of hit him further back than what I would like to. Mm-hmm. And that deer died in sight.
Yeah.
Because I hit him in the soft stuff with a big broadhead.
Yeah.
And
if you're shooting a tiny little paper cut, it's just, I mean, you might be, that may be what you have to shoot, right? Mm-hmm. I would love to test some broadheads that are fixed. I would love to shoot some pigs with broadheads that are fixed, but I can't because I'm limited because of my physical issues. You know what I mean? Like, and some guys are 5'6" and that's just what it is, man. Yeah. You're limited. So you may only have a 26 inch draw and you may not be pushing a hole. Like you may need to shoot what you got to shoot. Yeah. Don't make everybody else have to shoot it. You know what I mean?
Hell Whatever it takes to kill them, man.
That's right, man.
Do it the best you can.
I can just tell you this. If you literally punch a giant hole through something, it will die quick. Mm-hmm. So I do know that. I also know that I've punched some little slits through some animals that have lived longer than they should have. They were hit good.
Yeah. I paper cut a deer 2 years ago. Just got him back from the taxidermist.
Two lungs
with a very... very well received broadhead by the general public. Some would say the best made. It's made of iron and strong willed. And
its will was not strong enough in this case.
It was not strong enough that day, for sure. And I'm not saying it's a bad broadhead, but what I am saying is that if I'd have been shooting the big three blade mechanical, that deer would have died in sight and the dramatics would have been way less.
Yeah. Dude wouldn't have made it anywhere.
Nowhere.
So it's crazy, man. Like, and here's what, at the end of the day, like, we should all just have a little grace towards each other probably because it's bow hunting and we're very blessed to have the opportunity to bow hunt because that could be taken away and, you know, people say it's unethical or whatever. And at the end of the day, it's
ethics
super
are made up. That's
they
what
are.
I have
They're
to say.
Made up. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know. And then there's also this whole thing where, like, shots are going to go awry.
Yeah.
In the bow hunting situation. Right. They do in the gun hunting situation too, you know?
We went hunting with Garrett this past week and he killed stuff with a 6.5, which is a contested round as is. It's like the millennials round, right? Mm-hmm. The old guys don't like it. He shot a hog at 60 yards and something happened. We don't know what it was, but that shot wasn't instantly lethal like it should have been. And he ended up shooting that pig further down range.
Yeah. If he hadn't shot it way down range later on, we probably might not have found that pig.
No, I don't think we would have.
I don't think we would have either.
Yeah.
Weird. Hit it in the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, guys?
Nobody knows. I'll say this, Garrett, extremely proficient with the rifle.
Sure.
Right? It's not like he doesn't know what he's doing. He can smoke some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that no matter how fail-safe a method seems, it's just the real world out there.
That's exactly right, dude. We are not walking out, putting a chicken in a little bucket and cutting its head off. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what we're doing. We're hunting. These are wild animals. They don't want us near them. And we're trying to put a projectile into
them. There is enmity out there, right? Yeah. Isn't that the right word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the word. And that's
they don't
what,
like us.
Yeah, they don't. And so we have to deal with the fact that sometimes we will lose things, especially if you're shooting a lot of things in a year, you know? I mean, that's just, I've been the guy that shot $5 in a year, and I've been the guy that didn't shoot a buck in a year, you know? And so that's, I can tell you when I didn't shoot a buck, I didn't hit a buck bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
was that 16? Was that the last time you didn't kill a deer?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. I killed a doe that year, but not a buck.
Yeah.
That was the last time. So, but yeah, like I didn't shoot at a buck that year. So I didn't hit one bad. You know what I mean? If you're shooting at $5 in a year, then there's a chance that you're going to hit one bad.
Right. You see the guys in the major leagues that have batting averages of 0.00. It's probably because they just hadn't had any at bats. You know?
Yep. So, and if you, guess what, if you had one at bat the whole year and you got on base, you have 1,000.
That's
a 1,000, dude.
That's right. Or you could just have a real tough strike zone to hit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of.
It's crazy. There's so many. This is the thing. People argue a lot about this stuff, and that's what we're getting to. It's like, man, you know, we're just going to have to say this. We're trying to kill wild things. It's not always the right thing, but think about what you're doing and try to make it make sense in your mind. Yeah. That will give you the most confidence to go out and shoot stuff with us.
That's right.
And kill it.
Let's talk about the stuff that we do shoot.
Okay.
And just run through real quick what we like to shoot them with.
Broadhead wise or?
Yeah, bow setup wise.
Okay, bow setup.
Overall, let's start with pigs. Double up buckshot, specifically in the 12 gauge, 3.5 inch range, is hard to beat.
Pretty effective.
It is extremely effective.
Unless you hit trees with it, which I did on two shots the other day.
If we're talking archery setups,
yeah.
Tyler, what's your effective range arrow and broadhead setup?
Dude, pigs are awesome targets because they just look like a target. But they're actually hard to pick a spot on sometimes.
They are.
So I shoot a big broadhead typically, especially on like sizable bores. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a hard time getting a full pass through, I think, with a big broadhead. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to when you put it into both lungs and make a huge hole there. Mm-hmm. Typically, and pigs don't run fast enough to get way away and then die. Like if they're going to get hit in double lung, they're going to die, inside or
the one
a lot inside.
I shot the other day, did not get a pass through. I broke two ribs. I got a pass through, not a complete pass through. My broadhead was sticking out the backside and it had a good enough blood trail to follow to the dead pig, even though I didn't get a pass through. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes you won't have a very good blood trail, especially if you shoot a smaller broadhead. But that pig still was double lunged and died within 60.
Yeah.
Which is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They just don't go far.
Right. And so I typically like to shoot a big broadhead. Now, in the case of if you're looking at your trail cameras and there's a giant like we had last summer,
yeah,
I might should have shot a different broadhead
in
that situation.
You shot a hybrid on that one.
I did.
But it's still
losing energy when it opens or whatever, and still had a big opening blade too. I hit it in the wrong spot too. I hit it forward, which is not where you want to be.
Not a big board.
So And so I think that's my setup. I also will just say this: the setup I've shot the last year is the SR350. It's shooting 282 with a 500 grain arrow, so it's got a lot of downrange, and so. I feel pretty good about shooting that setup.
Michael's mad at you right now.
Yeah, Mike's jealous, dude. We need to get him into a faster bow for sure.
Well, none of these guys picked a SR350 when we told them they should have when they ordered bows. But
he's like, I didn't have a choice. What about you? What are you shooting on hogs? What do you like?
I'll tell you this. Last year, I shot a hog with a single bevel and didn't get a complete pass-through and didn't find the hog.
And it wasn't like a giant, was it?
No, it was like a 150-pound sow.
That's a good sow.
It's a decent sow, but not anything outrageous.
Yeah.
Shot her through both shoulders, and she ran off, and we didn't find her after a good blood trail for 150 yards. So.
The arrow was stuck in her, but it came out, right?
It came out, pass-through, but not complete pass-through.
Right.
After that shot, I was like, I'm going to make these expandables prove me wrong. Uh-huh. And they haven't yet. I shot one deer this year with a fixed blade, which was very effective.
Yeah. Where was this?
Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I knew you. It was with the strong-willed broadhead, right?
No, it was with Isaac's broadhead.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, which is now a Method broadhead,
yeah,
which they're cool. They fly really good. Mm. I shot a pig with that this year, too. 47-yard shot, hit a branch and a bush on the way. It's pretty sick.
It is. I'm going to tell them what that video is, but you go ahead and keep talking.
Okay. So
they got to watch this.
I always carry at least one fixed in my quiver, no matter what goes on. But the rest of the animals I shot this year were with giant 3-blades and 4-blade broadheads. I shot some 4-blade front deploys that were like 2 inches one way and 1.5 inches the other way, which is literally I'm throwing a diamond that is like the size you'd make with your hands through an animal, and killed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
The Oklahoma buck I shot with that, and the arrow stuck in the dirt.
Yeah.
So
Dunsky. That was a giant deer.
It's
dude.
A giant buck, dude. I'm ready to get him back.
And he has a lot of blood in his body, and he did not go far. Man.
The that red pig I shot the other day, I shot with that four blade too. That was the one that didn't come all the way out.
I kind of want to shoot some pigs with a four blade, man.
Yeah.
What was I thinking? There was something I wanted to shoot with a four blade the other day.
Turkey.
I was thinking, turkey. That's exactly right.
We're going to get to that. Yeah. So what's the name of that video you're talking about?
Okay, so that video is called Buck or Boar. That's pretty smoked, Greg.
I was pretty smoked, Greg.
Yeah. You got to watch it. It's KC spending some time on Texas Public. He shoots. He actually shoots at a big buck, and it has some encounters. It's a section of our season that he spent hunting on some public and stuff, and it's got a awesome boar in there that he smokes.
Yeah.
Like, I watched that shot the other day, actually. I watched the whole video the other day because that's one of my favorite videos from this year.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I watched that video, and I was getting hyped by myself in my living room,
We're going to watch that after we get done with this because I want to see that shot again.
It's awesome, dude.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, I like to look back on shots I've made and be like, man, that was awesome. Because, like, the shot is the moment you remember the most, you know.
Yep.
So it's like a good way to bring the memories back.
Yep.
Okay. Whitetail.
Wow. You're not,
whoa, we're playing it. Hey. We're playing it.
How do I turn these speakers off? Different buttons for this different computer. Sorry about that, y'all.
That's all right. I'll
get Wells Fargo. Got a free ad in there. Yeah, gummit.
Don't use them. I've used them before. Yeah. So you're not going to change anything up between whitetail and hogs, right? It's going to be the same setup.
No, I'm probably not. I mean, I can say definitely with the whitetail that I've shot, I can't think of. And maybe it's all running together now, but I can't think of a time when I shot a deer with that broadhead. And in South Dakota this year was the only time I hit way forward, for sure hit knuckle, you know. And
I
just
don't think you'd had any other outcome with any other broadhead.
We talked about that, on that podcast. I don't know. If you want a more detailed picture of what was going on there, you can go back and listen to South Dakota Rap podcast from this year. It's probably going to be in October from this year. You can follow back to that. But other than that, like, every deer I've shot with that broadhead I've killed, I think. And so I think I would stay with it. And I've also had pass-throughs, I think, on, like, every deer with that broadhead.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've had one that didn't come out at least a little bit.
Yeah.
On that broadhead. So
even before, you used to shoot, like, an old Matthews in a light arrow.
Yep.
And you shot a pretty similar broadhead.
Yep.
And still killed a lot of deer dead.
Yeah. And
that's like with the outdoor TV type setup. You know, like at what a lot of people shoot.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't getting pass throughs all the time. A lot of times I was hitting like the offside shoulder.
Yeah. Nameless is that way.
Yeah.
But you smoked him.
Yeah. I mean, and the blood trail was awesome. Right. Yeah. But we didn't see him fall, but it was, you know, super thick in there. But yeah, I think that overall, like, I go back to what you were talking about with your red pig. Even though I wasn't getting pass-throughs, I was shooting a giant broadhead, and it's still coming out of one of the holes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I always had great blood trails if I hit a deer good, man.
Yeah, that's a problem, man, is if you shoot a smaller broadhead and your arrow stays in the animal, you don't get a pass-through, you're kind of in for it,
man. I'm telling you, dude. Like, people want to talk about, well, if you shoot a big mechanical, you don't get two holes, you're not going to get a blood trail. And it's like, no, that's really not the way it works. You got a giant hole on one side. Mm-hmm. If you shoot a little slit, you know,
they can both cover.
They can both just.
I've seen.
And you've talked about the skin displacement.
Yeah.
So, theory or whatever.
Take your back of your hand and pinch the skin up. Okay, if you're listening, do that. You can move that skin around. All right. Now flex your fingers in and out. You can see the skin move forward and backwards while you do that. Well, a deer is doing the same thing whenever it's taking steps, but it's doing it over its vitals with the hide that's there. If you shoot a deer that's stretched out and all of a sudden he's running and he's not stretched out anymore, there's a real good chance that the skin that you shot through and then the body cavity that you shot through are not lining up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a hole on the inside of a deer through its body cavity and a hole through the skin that are in different places, and blood can't get out very easily whenever that happens. So it's not an ideal situation. Whereas when you shoot a big broadhead, it doesn't really matter all that much. You're still going to have some blood loss through there. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say,
two holes is better than one.
Yeah.
And I shoot a setup that the intention of that, of having two holes whenever mm-hmm. I shoot a deer.
I mean, I think with what you're shooting, you're pretty much going to get it.
Almost every time.
I mean,
yeah. Pigs have big ribs.
Right.
Big ribs. And that sow that I shot the other day was like 180-ish. Mm. She was big. I broke two ribs and poked out the other side.
Yeah.
I'm not going to shoot a whitetail next year that has ribs as thick as that hog, I don't think. So within that begs the question, does elk change anything? Because you're going to shoot an elk this year for the first time.
Am I?
Yeah.
Man, that's spooky.
You're going to have the option to, at least.
I probably will do some fixed blade testing this year. But as far as like shooting at targets and seeing if I can get something, a specific type that doesn't really plane for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, you know, there's some smaller mechanicals that I'm interested in
mm-hmm.
for sure. There's like an 1 3/8 cut that I'm looking at that I think is pretty interesting to me. It's well-made mechanical, you know, good components and just a smaller cut. So hopefully better penetration there overall.
Yeah. While we're on that note, let's talk about 2-blade versus 3-blade mechanicals.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a long time I shot Rages, and a Rage Extreme is what I used to shoot a lot. And then I shot Hypodermics for a while, but there's still 2 blades. And there is a world where a 2-blade just doesn't quite make a great hole in an animal.
Yep.
Whereas a 3-blade, you're literally putting a hole, not mm-hmm. a slit. You know, mm-hmm. there's a reason. I've talked about this before, but I believe it's the Geneva Conference. They outlawed bayonets that were three-sided, like 3-bladed, like a triangle,
mm-hmm.
because they couldn't stitch the wounds, and too many people were dying from that. So now, in war, the rules of war are that you have to use a bayonet that is just a standard blade.
Mm-hmm.
And so you take that logic and you say, maybe since I'm allowed to use a 3-bladed thing on an animal, I should do that.
Right.
You know,
I mean, you think about the buck you were talking about that you double lunged that did not go mm-hmm. down. What's happening there, or what potentially could happen there, is that cut is like a paper cut. If you've ever paper cut your finger, if you just don't stretch those cuts out, that thing won't even bleed sometimes. Mm. You know, it just hurts, right? But it's like, it's just doesn't bleed until all of a sudden you start messing with it and allow that to happen. But like mm-hmm. essentially all the blood vessels you might have cut might just come right back together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so they're still just kind of either feeding themselves, or they're like just working as like what people say, put pressure on your, you know, on, mm-hmm. on your cut or whatever. It's just pressure that's keeping anything from happening or flowing. So, you know, it makes sense if you think about it, those couple of ways for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely am with you. I like the idea of making a hole as opposed to making a cut, a slit.
Yeah. Turkeys, we are going to change setup some
mm-hmm.
because you don't need 540 grains to go through a turkey. In fact, there is a thought out there with archery setups that an arrow stuck in a turkey is better than an arrow through a turkey. Have you heard that before?
I've heard it, yeah.
I don't know. I hadn't shot a turkey with a bow. I don't think. Maybe I have. Maybe. But
I think I hit one time in the feathers.
It's pretty easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows where to aim, dude? Nobody can really explain
that to me. I don't
want to
shoot at a strutting tom. I want to shoot at a turkey that's standing there, maybe head up or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A super light arrow with a gigantic mechanical, the biggest I can absolutely find, is going to be my goal.
Yeah.
Because it's a bird, you know?
Yep.
And they are not very tough. So trying to get a big old cut, because underneath all those feathers, the body's in one place and the outline is in a different place. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you hit something. It's kind of my goal.
Yep. I'm going to be shooting something big. Mm-hmm. I wish they made, you know, they make those guillotine broadheads.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you shot one into the body, it would break the blades off.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish they made a broadhead that was like that big to shoot into the body of a turkey.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
I think it could work.
You know, feathers are pretty tough.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see. I don't think that there will be any penetration problems, you know, as far as getting in there.
Mm-hmm.
But
I used to shoot buzzards with a pellet gun while they're flying over, and like you wouldn't get through their feathers, you know. Mm-hmm. And so like I think that you could get to a point where you're shooting too many blades, too much weightage on a turkey. But I don't know. You know, if you could shoot them in a spot like the butt where all those fan feathers come together, you're just hitting skin right there. So, or you hit them in the head. I mean, dude, if I got a turkey at like 15 yards, I'm probably going to shoot at its head.
Really? Man, I'm not.
I feel like it's a good way for me to hit something that will for sure kill it.
Yeah, I do too. But I think your setup's going to be plenty fine to go through the body.
Probably.
I feel like that.
I just think it'd be cool to hit one in the head.
Yeah, it would be awesome. Your target's pretty small.
Then they run out there to 40 yards and look around like they don't know what happened.
Because they don't have any eyes. Shoot them. Shot their eyes out.
It's funny. Any other thoughts about setup stuff?
Yeah, I mean.
He's tall. Yao Ming.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's him. He's a tall guy. You know, as far as setup stuff goes, we didn't really talk stabilizers. That's kind of like another kind of contested point. A lot of guys think there's a theory that like if it goes outside the limb pocket, then it's helping you stabilize. Otherwise, it's not. I think that if you back to the target archers, like they use really long ones, and so there's something happening there, but. I think that's not very practical in hunting. So I think mine's been like a 9-inch stabilizer the last couple of years. That's seems to be an okay spot. There's back bars and stuff you can use that can weight stuff. I mean, it really just goes back to like how much do you want to tinker with this thing? How much weight do you want to carry in the woods, and how like mobile do you want to be and adaptable in a situation where you might have to kind of squeeze a shot into, you know, or squeeze a draw into some brush or whatever. So, those are kind of maybe other thoughts. And then just overall, like finding a good place. And I think one of the more important things that I've done or tried to do is finding a good place where like your broadhead setup has, I kind of think of like broadhead as being the most important, and then finding a arrow weight setup that will get that broadhead through the quarry that you're chasing. And then I think of like making that as light as possible to get it through my quarry, but also give me the flattest shooting arrow. So those are like the three ways I categorize how I want to shoot or what I need to shoot something very effectively. And outside of that, everything else is kind of a lot of preference and little things that can help you potentially shoot more accurately or better, I think. So it's kind of how I think about it.
Sounds scientific to me.
It's redneck science, at least.
Well, what else do you expect out of us, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's it. So, yeah, I think, you know, we wanted to talk about this because it is – the time of year when, you know, hogs are a thing for guys in the South, but like really, the target shooting is starting to hit, like, all the like tack events and those kind of things are going to start happening here in the next month or so, probably, I think. So, you know, it's something guys start thinking about this time of year. And, it's something, you know, where you can look back at last season, think about how your setup performed, and then make adjustments off of that. And, it's for us, at least us in the South, like the weather is nice. Like this morning, I wanted to shoot. I didn't really have time to. Instead, I was running. But, like, I wanted to shoot this morning. And so, you know, it's going to be one of those things where, like, here pretty soon when Eric shows up in the morning and Michael shows up in the morning and, oh, we're going to start just shooting the bows. And that's what we do, you know. So, it's fun, man. It's fun to watch what Uncle Ted calls the mystical flight of the arrow.
The mystical flight.
Yep.
How about that?
Yep.
So you feel as if mystical is a secular?
Or here we go. I knew this was the question.
Biblical word.
I don't know that I've ever seen mystical in the Bible unless it's talking about like magi type people or whatever. Mm. I don't know. I don't know if I've ever seen that in the Bible.
Might though. Be neutral.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't Is know. Anything neutral?
That's a good question. Tune in next time at the Element Podcast to hear our debate on neutrality. Remember to tune in next time, guys, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's MARKETHOUSE.com. And use the code COUNTRY.